It's the Sound Kitchen.
Mmm, yummy.
It's the Sound Kitchen.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
You're listening to the Sound Kitchen.
Yummy.
And Susan Owens Beef Cooking.
Watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice. I'm gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Hello everyone, bienvenue and welcome to the Sound Kitchen. Are you well on this Saturday, the 23rd day of December? I do hope so. Only two more days until Christmas. Coming up, a special Christmas story, so don't touch that dial.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
Lots to cover today, so let's get straight to the quiz. On the 25th of November, I asked you a question about the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt. An international team of researchers had just discovered a huge 30-meter-long void within the pyramid. No one is quite sure of the reason for this void. Was it a tunnel, a burial chamber, a gallery, or ancient engineering designed by the pyramid's architects to lessen the weight on the chambers and keep them from collapsing? Whatever it's finally decided to be, I asked you to send me the name of the pharaoh who commissioned the Great Pyramid of Giza and when he is thought to have reigned. The answer is Khufu, who is also known by his Greek name Cheops. He's thought to have ruled from 2509 BC to 2483 BC during Egypt's Fourth Dynasty. Though he constructed the largest pyramid Egypt has ever seen, very little is known about him, so his pyramid offers one of the few looks into his life and reign. The site at Giza where his pyramid was built also contains two other major pyramids and the Sphinx. It's a glorious place. I'm fortunate enough to have been there. The winners of this week's quiz are beloved Samuel Francis from St. Catherine in Jamaica. Samuel is an RFI Listeners Club member, a Sound Kitchen essayist, a Sound Kitchen cookbook contributor, and general all-around great guy. Samuel included his wishes for a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all of us with his entry and reminded us that the Great Pyramid of Giza is one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. And, that might make a good quiz question. Another faithful RFI Listeners Club member is a winner this week, Father Steve Wara from Bamenda, Cameroon, who also wishes all of us the best of holidays and a happy 2018. Two more club members on the list of winners this week, Mamadou Alamu Diallo from Serekunda, the Gambia, and Miss Usha Hazarika from Assam, India. Finally, there's Amina Kakun from Sirajganj, Bangladesh. Congratulations to this week's winners, and thanks to each and every one of you who wrote in. Another triumph for French sailors. As the RFI English website reported, a young Frenchman beat the world record for the fastest nonstop solo navigation of the globe this past Sunday. My question to you is, what is his name and how long did it take him to sail around the world? Again, what is the name of the French sailor who beat the world record for nonstop solo navigation of the globe this past week, and how long did he take to do it? You have until the 22nd of January to get your answers in. Be sure to tune in on the 27th of January to see if your answer wins a prize. As always, be sure you include your postal address and, if you have one, your RFI Listeners Club membership number.
Send your quiz answers to english.service@rfi.fr. That's english.service@rfi.fr. Or to Susan Owensby, RFI BP 9516 75016 Paris, France. That's BP 9516 75016 Paris, France.
This is a story that was read on All Things Considered, a fabulous evening news program on National Public Radio in the U.S., where I worked before I moved to France. It's their national story project, stories written by listeners and then read on air by well-known U.S. authors. In this case, Paul Auster, who, by the way, is one of my favorite contemporary writers. See where I get my inspiration for trying to get you involved? The woman introducing the story is Susan Stamberg, my all-time favorite broadcaster. She's a radio goddess.
Not all children find gifts under the tree on Christmas morning. Some find them in unexpected places. Here's the story, Christmas Morning 1949, read by Paul Auster.
A light drizzle was falling as my sister Jill and I ran out of the Methodist church, eager to get home and play with the presents that Santa had left for us and our baby sister, Sharon. Across the street from the church was a Pan American gas station where the Greyhound bus stopped. It was closed for Christmas, but I noticed a family standing outside the locked door, huddled under the narrow overhang in an attempt to keep dry. I wondered briefly why they were there, but then forgot about them as I raced to keep up with Jill. Once we got home, there was barely time to enjoy our presents. We had to go off to our grandparents' house for our annual Christmas dinner. As we drove down the highway through town, I noticed that the family was still there, standing outside the closed gas station. My father was driving very slowly down the highway. The closer we got to the turnoff for my grandparents' house, the slower the car went. Suddenly, my father U-turned in the middle of the road and said, "I can't stand it." "What?" asked my mother. "It's those people back there at the Pan Am standing in the rain. They've got children. It's Christmas. I can't stand it." When my father pulled into the service station, I saw that there were five of them, the parents and three children, two girls and a small boy. My father rolled down his window. "Merry Christmas," he said. "Howdy," the man replied. He was very tall and had to stoop slightly to peer into the car. Jill, Sharon, and I stared at the children, and they stared back at us. "You waiting on the bus?" my father asked. The man said that they were. They were going to Birmingham, where he had a brother and prospects of a job. "Well, that bus isn't going to come along for several hours, and you're getting wet standing there. Windborne's just a couple miles up the road. They've got a shed with a cover there and some benches," my father said. "Why don't you all get in the car, and I'll run you up there." The man thought for a moment, and then he beckoned to his family. They climbed into the car. They had no luggage, only the clothes they were wearing. Once they were settled in, my father looked back over his shoulder and asked the children if Santa had found them yet. Three glum faces mutely gave him the answer. "Well, I didn't think so," my father said, winking at my mother, "because when I saw Santa this morning, he told me he was having trouble finding y'all, and he asked me if he could leave your toys at my house. We'll just go get them before I take you to the bus stop." All at once, the three children's faces lit up, and they began to bounce around in the back seat, laughing and chattering. When we got out of the car at our house, the three children ran through the front door and straight to the toys that were spread out under our Christmas tree. One of the girls spied Jill's doll and immediately hugged it to her breast. I remember that the little boy grabbed Sharon's ball, and the other girl picked up something of mine. All this happened a long time ago, but the memory of it remains clear. This was the Christmas when my sisters and I learned the joy of making others happy. My mother noticed that the middle child was wearing a short-sleeved dress, so she gave the girl Jill's only sweater to wear. My father invited them to join us at our grandparents' for Christmas dinner, but the parents refused. Even when we all tried to talk them into coming, they were firm in their decision. Back in the car, on the way to Windborne, my father asked the man if he had money for bus fare. His brother had sent tickets, the man said. My father reached into his pocket and pulled out $2, which was all he had left until his next payday. He pressed the money into the man's hand. The man tried to give it back, but my father insisted. "It'll be late when you get to Birmingham, and these children will be hungry before then. Take it. I've been broke before, and I know what it's like when you can't feed your family." We left them there at the bus stop in Windborne. As we drove away, I watched out the window as long as I could, looking back at the little girl hugging her new doll.
The story Christmas 1949, written by NPR listener Sylvia Seymour Aiken and read by novelist Paul Auster.
Many thanks to National Public Radio in the U.S. and to the story's author, Sylvia Seymour Aiken, to the reader, author Paul Auster, and to that radio goddess, Susan Stamberg. It's time to clear the table and wash the dishes, my friends. Thanks to all of you who wrote in, and keep those cards, letters, emails, and text messages coming. Many thanks to my colleague Maxime Neveu for helping me put the show together, and thanks to you for tuning in. Be sure and join me next Saturday at 6:15, 7:15, 14:45, and 16:45 Universal Time, right here in the Sound Kitchen. I'm Susan Owensby. Be well, do good work, and stay in touch.
Merry Christmas!
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where those treetops listen and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow, the snow. And I am dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write. May your days, may your days be merry and bright. And may all your Christmases be white.
Where the treetops listen, and there to listen, to hear sleigh bells in the snow. Yeah, 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 I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Christmas is